audio service, National Radio Club.
Look, Bruce, it's the bat signal.
Yes, are you ready, Robin?
Yes, Batman.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for October 2003. This is issue number 223, and I'm your host, Fred Bobby, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. Our address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. Telephone number is 419-228-6223. If you're on the internet, you can send me email at fredv, that's F-R-E-D-V, at nrcdxas.org. If you live in the United States of America and would like to become a member of the DX Audio Service, and we sure hope you will, the cost of a subscription is $28. To members in Canada, the subscription rate is $32, and Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that is mentioned, or just simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org/member and sign up using our PayPal credit card system. Well, it's indeed a great honor to have with us, for the last time here on the DX Audio Service, someone who has put a lot of heart and soul into the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, as well as DX News Magazine. I'd like to introduce Jerry for possibly the last time, but we hope to hear from him from time to time. Here's Jerry Starr with a look at the AM Switch.
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News Magazine. Reference number 565 begins with these call letter changes. 560 WLLZ in Monroe, Michigan. No longer will be Wheels. It's now WRDT. 620 KTLK Portland, Oregon becomes KPOJ. 700, the new station in Wiley, Texas will be KXXT. 900 WOTW in Nashua, New Hampshire becomes WSHN. 950 WWJK Monk's Corner, South Carolina will be WQTK. Two changes on 1150 WBPS in Boston, Massachusetts changes calls again, this time to WJTK, and KKGT in Portland, Oregon becomes KRMZ. 1160, the new station in Cleveland, Missouri will be KCTO. 1220 WEZU in Stillwater, Minnesota changing to WMGT. 1230 WZNW Columbus, Ohio goes back to the old heritage call of WCOL. 1340 KIST Santa Barbara, California becomes KLTK. 1380 KRNN North Little Rock, Arkansas to KDXE. And on 1510 KTIM, now in the city of Piedmont, California, becomes KMZT. Several new stations have been granted, one on 1250 in Ottawa, Ontario. It'll be 1,000 watts in the daytime, only 100 watts at night, and non-directional. That basically fills up the frequency left vacant since CBOF went off the air. And on 1610, there will be a new station in Toronto with 99 watts day and night, non-directional. And according to the CRTC, this station will broadcast 30 to 40 hours a week of live play-by-play of community amateur sporting events. Several applications of interest on 970 CJYR in Edson, Alberta. They want to move to 95.5. 1150 KBIS Highland Park, Texas. They'd like to move up a notch to 1160, where they are asking for 25 kilowatts in the daytime, only 900 watts at night. 1230 CIYR in Hinton, Alberta wants to move to 97.5 FM. 1340 CJCM Grand Center, Alberta wants to move to 99.7. 1400 KHCB in Galveston, Texas, they would like to relocate their daytime transmitter site to a new three-tower system. Very unusual to find directional patterns on a Class 4 frequency. They would like to move a lot closer to Houston. The night location will stay the same. 1530 WRPM, Poplarville, Mississippi, they'd like to move to 1170 kHz with 5 kilowatts daytime only. Taking a look at grants of interest, both in the expanded band, two stations moving much closer to major markets. 1680 WTTM, Princeton, New Jersey, will relocate their transmitter to a new city of license, Lindenwold, New Jersey. That places them much closer to the suburban Philadelphia market. And on 1690 WSWK in Adel, Georgia, they'll relocate their transmitter and change city of license to Avondale Estates, Georgia, which moves them into suburban Atlanta. They'll be diplexing into one of the towers at WABT 1420. Moving on to otherness on 790 WSVG in Mount Jackson, Virginia, this silent station has returned to the air. They are relaying WAMM in the mornings, then about 12:30 in the afternoon go to separate programming. 1110 WKRA in Holly Springs, Mississippi, this station was fined $11,000 by the FCC for, of all things, operating after sunset. They're licensed for daytime only. And I hear a cheer going up from the crowd. 1170 WMLE in Cumming, Georgia. The license is canceled. The call deleted at the licensee's request. Of course, this is done because of the improvement on the co-owned station on 1160. 1510 KMZT in Piedmont, California. They are now in this city of license, formerly in San Rafael. And on 1560 KOCY Del City, Oklahoma, this silent station is on the air from this new city of license. They used to be in Chickasha. That wraps it up for this month on AM Switch, and it wraps it up for the last 200 and some for us, because this will be the last time we'll be on AM Switch, I think. Bill Hale, the new AM Switch editor, is set to take over with the next edition, although if things don't work out quite right, I may be here for one more. We'll have to wait and see. Thanks to everyone who has helped over the years with our portion of the DX Audio Service. As you're probably aware, we have retired after 40-plus years in the broadcasting business, and after 565 editions of AM Switch, it's time for somebody else to take over, because my wife and I are planning on doing a lot of traveling, and we just can't meet all the deadlines for AM Switch. AM Switch is not the kind of column you can prepare ahead of time, because a lot of the information you hear here came in today. So it's been fun. We've enjoyed all the friends we've made over the years through the DX Audio Service. We'll see you at conventions, and we'll still pop up here from time to time. But for the moment, maybe for the last time, we get to say now, here's John Bowker.
It takes a monster from outer space to make my baby want my embrace. And when I hold her, she's like a dream. If only she can hear somebody scream.
Well, hello, everybody, and for one last time, thanks, Jerry. You know, it's been quite a trip, hasn't it, Jerry? I'd like to play a little recording we made over the Labor Day weekend in the Grand Ballroom of the Holiday Inn South in Dallas, Texas. I've got the tape right here.
You know, for some 15, 16 years, I've been saying, thanks, Jerry, at the beginning of these travelogues, and that's about to change. I'm going to start saying thanks, Bill, and Bill is Bill Hale. And Bill, I'm delighted to have you right here in the studio with us to get things started.
Thank you, John. How we got all these people in this little studio is beyond me.
In this closet?
In the closet, yes, yes.
Well, Bill, in fact, we're recording this, of course, at the Dallas Convention. And how are you going to get all the information that Jerry used to assemble?
Basically, what I have been doing probably for the last year is look at the Daily Digest from the FCC and gleaning out 99% of the TV and FM stuff and holding over the AM stuff, which could be as little as one item a day or three items a day, whatever, which is it's getting smaller and smaller all the time, and deciphering it from a database, which the FCC also puts out. The applications and actions come first, and then they show up in the database two or three days later. But some of the older stuff has been there for years, been there since the 80s. Applications have been floating around, or there may have been what they call mutual exclusive applications for one frequency or something at the same site. And the FCC finally decides on it. And also, there's reports that I get from other sources. Inside radio, I read that all the time. And then there's several bulletin boards across the country that focus in on certain parts of the areas, like our upper Midwest broadcasting puts out stuff on Minnesota, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Northwest Broadcasters has a nice website, which every once in a while there's a tidbit on there, and Los Angeles, there's a website on that stuff to keep up on that.
And when you get mutually exclusive information, it just runs your phone bill up, I imagine.
Yes, it does.
Well, Bill, you know, all of us in the National Radio Club, the DX Audio Service, and I can say for sure, Fred Vobey, want to thank you very much for volunteering to take on this wonderful thing. It's really the linchpin of the DX Audio Service. We make no bones about that. So.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to do this, and I was actually flabbergasted when I got the email from Jerry saying he would like me to take over for him, and I hope to carry on the fine tradition that Jerry has for the last, 15, 16 years, whatever it's been.
1985.
Okay, well, it's 18 then. Thanks to him, and I hope to continue on in the fine tradition that he has established.
Well, we're looking forward to working with Bill very closely, of course, and welcome to the group, Bill Hale. But Jerry, you know, I've always enjoyed the handoffs you've concocted at the end of the AM switch segment, but as with all good things, we must say a bientôt, a phrase meaning until we meet again. Well, enough. Let's get on to the cheery side of things and see what the AM radio dial looks like across the country at the 820 dial position. This is another clear channel frequency. Let's take them in the usual order, starting in the great Northeast. And that means we'll first hear from our neighbors in New York City. As we begin the October 2003 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Stay tuned for late news and weather, followed by the BBC News Hour here on WNYC, New York Public Radio. From Boston, I'm Rob Nelson.
And I'm Pat Bodner.
Monitor Radio brings you the day's news from around the world.
Now, of course, you may be aware that WNYC once operated at 8:30 on the dial for many, many years. In fact, I rather expect we'll hear from WNYC again in December when we do our travels listening to the 8:30 dial position. Interesting thing, though, when WNYC first moved to 8:20 on the dial, they were authorized for 10,000 watts during the daytime hours and 5,000 watts at night. But about 2 years later, they were granted a reduction in nighttime power with a directional antenna pattern from their transmitting site in the New Jersey marshlands. So now, at night, they have only a 1,000-watt power bill to pay. Well, back in 1995, Linda and I traveled into upstate New York and tuned into the station that John German was mentioning on the Musings here last month. By the way, glad to hear from you, John. I'm hoping you'll be able to join us for a day or two next Labor Day when the NRC convention convenes up in your area. Well, more on that later, perhaps. John was quite right with his comments about WIQT. It operated at 1,000 on the dial for many years, but could only operate during the daytime hours. So they cast about for a better frequency and received a construction permit in 1987 to move down to 820. That gave them about 4,000 watts during the daytime, but over 800 watts at night. And then in 1995, things began to change. The call sign of the 820 station changed from WIQT to WQIX. It had been their FM call sign for a short time. Here's a cut from that year.
High about 70 right now. It's checking in at a very nice 68 degrees.
WQIS AM 820, your racing station.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Deirdre Bryant.
And within a year, they changed again.
Saturday, more clouds with a chance of rain. It's 50...
News, talk, and NASCAR. 820 Wheel. WWLZ. Horseheads El Marco.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Deirdre Bryant.
Now look, I don't try to make fools out of anybody. And I have to admit, I just love the way that poor fellow lost his place. But we pass through town, we give them an hour, we make a recording, and we go to the next town. It's a fine station, though. As a matter of fact, here's another recording just to make amends. This by Mark Durenberger when he was recently up in the Finger Lakes region.
News, talk, and NASCAR. 820 Wheels. WWLZ Horseheads Elmira.
1490 WGMF Watkins Glen Montour Falls.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Catherine Cowdery.
I wanted to show you the relationship they have with another station up there. Well, we're going to head south now into Frederick, Maryland. Here's the 820 station there that we recorded in 1990.
Along with music, let's see here. We got Lee Greenwood coming up, KT Oslin, the Judds will be coming up next hour. News is next at 82Q.
More music, no bull. Frederick's Hit Country Radio, 82Q. WZYQ, Frederick.
Update from ABC News. I'm George Engel.
And then a year later, we were passing through Frederick once again.
It is 2 o'clock. Good afternoon from Michael Luce, playing Frederick's best music at Frederick's only country station, the new 82Q, WQSI Frederick.
And then earlier this year, we passed through and listened in once again.
Broadcasting real country to four states and the nation's capital. We're Extra Country, WXTR Frederick, a Bonneville station.
If I could find a love to treasure with this heart and with these hands.
Well, actually, my notes show that that recording was made in 1998, but the station apparently hasn't changed significantly since then. And that means we can drift down to Southern Virginia for this next station operating at 820 on the dial.
This is Virginia's newest and most powerful 24-hour Christian radio station, Love 82, WGGM, Chester, Richmond, Petersburg.
You know, I'm surprised not to see any station in the Carolinas operating at 820, or even in Georgia, for that matter. Although, that reminds me of a phone call I received a few days back from Paul Burkhart in Massachusetts. Hi, Paul. Paul was commenting on the 810 dial position that we covered, a couple of months ago now. I mentioned that there were no stations in Florida at 810. He suggested it was probably because ZNS3, that operates from Grand Bahama Island, put such a fine signal into the southern part of the Florida Peninsula that certainly wipes out any 810 station down those parts, I'll say that. Oh, and by the way, up toward the Panhandle, of course, you have another 810 up there coming out of nearby Alabama, and a couple in Georgia, so that pretty well eliminates 810 from Florida. But it's a good point, Paul. Thanks for the call. Oh, and by the way, Paul, ZNS2 that we were discussing, now I found it. It operates out of Nassau on 1240 kilohertz, only with 1 kilowatt. It's like a regular graveyard station. So it's no wonder that neither of us was familiar with it. All that aside, let's hear how the Florida market around Tampa developed at 820 over the years. Here's what we had from Tandy Way when he sent me a recording back in 1990.
A20 AM WRFA in Largo, your Southern Gospel giant.
And then by 1995, Linda and I did a band scan and heard this from Largo.
Will anyone score on Darren Poopa? Am I really French-Canadian? Who can say for sure? All I know for sure is that I will soon be interrupted by some rude Americans.
Be there Thursday, April 20th, when the Lightning take on the Quebec Nordiques at 7:35. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 813-287-8844.
820, the team.
AM 820, the team, is WNZE, Largo, Tampa Bay, a service of Axon Communications, a NASDAQ-listed company.
The hippest place to be, the greatest party on the sea, on the Gulf of Mexico, Empress Cruise Line.
I should explain that Largo is a suburb of Tampa and St. Petersburg, although those two cities are more than 20 miles apart, incidentally. And for a short time, the Largo station was operating as WZTM.
Heineken, no cabe duda. Importada por Heineken USA, White Plains, New York.
WZTM, AM, Largo, WMDG, FM, Bay City, Tampa.
WZTM.
And this next recording that you're about to hear was made from my studio here in Sun City Center a couple of days ago.
siglas WMGG.
Largo Tampa.
Nuestro nombre, Mega 820.
Nuestro propósito,
tocar más música por hora. La Mega.
With that, we jump to the north some 600 miles into Tennessee for this next station at 820. And pay particular attention to the interference you're going to hear on this next cut. See if you can identify the interfering station.
Highs in the upper 60s to lower 70s. Lows in the lower 50s to upper 40s. You're listening to Morning in America on WWAM Jasper. It's news time from the USA Radio Network.
USA Radio Network News. Good morning, this is Bob Agnew.
Could there be any doubt about the interfering station? You got the whole singing jingle there almost. If you have no idea, though, wait till next month and you'll hear plenty from that dominant station on 820. Now, some stations take on roles of importance. It has to do with the program content. And here next is one of those stations, owned and operated by The Ohio State University in Columbus.
It's 8 o'clock. Weekend Edition Saturday is next, here on your source for NPR News and Intelligent Talk. 820 WOSU AM, Columbus.
From NPR News in Washington, D.C., this is Weekend Edition.
And thanks to Clark Ingram for that recording. Let's wind up this session in Indiana, because back in 1976, we taped this transmission from Evansville at 820 on the dial.
This reminder from everyone at Central Beverage Company, who hope that you've enjoyed the Fibber McGee and Molly Christmas show. And they also wish you and your family the merriest of Christmases and the happiest and healthiest of New Year's. This is WIKY, AM 82 Evansville.
And then in 1991, we passed through town again to hear this.
The Scarecrow People from XTC on I-82. Good morning, 7:59 is the time. This is Edward J. Great music coming up for you the next hour. We're just a couple of seconds away from the Associated Press News Network. All kinds of good things and more. Got to stick around to hear the best of I-82. You're listening to the radio voice of the University of Southern Indiana. This is WSWI Evansville with Edward J., Debbie Rauscher, and Marty Book.
AP Network News, good morning. I'm Chuck Rice. Election day across the land.
I know just how that fellow felt watching the clock move ever so slowly toward the top of the hour for the news. Well, now, next month, we'll have some special guest SJs, that stands for station jockeys, as we complete the 820 dial position. We'll be hearing from Ken Honestchuk, trying to explain a few of the changes that have occurred in Chicago over the years at 820. And Pete Taylor will take us way out west to Berrien, Washington. John Adams, we may get a few words from him, too, about some stuff out there. Far west coast area. Should be a lot of fun, so stay tuned. Oh, now, speaking of a lot of fun, let's hear from Mark Durenberger.
When some big zombie tries to put me down and says his ghoul is scary, I tell him right away, what's the matter, gruesome? Ain't you heard of my ghoul? She's the terror of the cemetery.
Mark Durenberger here with the DX Audio Service, and we are on our great tour of WLW Cincinnati with engineer Paul Jellison, who has been so good to take us through this entire plant. And we have gone from room to room, and one room is more fascinating than the other. Now he's about to open a fire door. And we have entered a room where Giants once played.
Yes, this is the back room of the basement. And in that room was the 500 kilowatt modulation transformer. And as you can see, it's probably 11 feet tall, something like that.
It's oval. It's about 7 to 8 feet long and about, what, 5 feet wide?
Yes, and it weighs approximately 37,000 pounds.
So you're not going to move that just to make room for some?
No, we actually had two of these. We did remove one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when we were cleaning up for PCB issues.
Right.
And we actually removed one. And we actually had to lower a forklift into the basement here, and the forklift actually drug the thing over, and we lifted it with a 20-ton crane.
Oh my word!
And the guy, the crane operator running the cranes, when he got a hold of it, once he got done, he said that was the heaviest 20 tons he had ever lifted.
the most dense,
yes,
compact. Now ahead of us is the generator. Is this the newer version?
Yes. This is a Cato Light. It's a 210 kilowatt generator. It runs basically the entire property. It runs even the house next door is on this generator. It puts out 480 volts and will actually run this plant plus the FM transmitter that is out in the back.
And it's powered by a good old diesel.
It's got a Volvo six-cylinder diesel. Turbocharged, and I'm thinking the horsepower is in the range of 400, but don't hold me to that.
Now, you know that our listeners would love to hear you crank that thing.
Oh, I can certainly do that.
Let's do it.
All righty, here we go.
Watch it, folks. Started faster than my car.
Yeah, we keep it warm. We keep the block at about 100 degrees all the time.
Now, you exercise this every month or load?
This runs every Sunday. About 7 o'clock in the morning, it comes on and just runs. It doesn't take the load. And then we have our switching here so that if we're running one of our 50 kilowatt transmitters into the dummy load, that we can run it off of there. That way we don't pay tremendous peak charges.
Your demand meter doesn't go up.
Correct, correct.
So there it is. It's it would not fit in my living room, this Cato Light. So this room now, which is big.
Yes.
Is 75 feet long at least, and maybe 30 or 40 feet wide, even longer than that.
I would say 70 feet. Probably, yeah. Well, you can see the pedestals for the pumps. And matter of fact, there's one of the pumps still back in the corner. And you can see the huge pipes in the back that actually brought the water in.
These pipes are going out, look like they're about 8 or 10 inches in diameter. My word.
Yes. And those pumps, you had a main in the back, or actually you had two complete systems. Those pumps pumped water out to the pond, the spray pond. And then there was another set of pumps, which we got rid of. For some reason, we had a lot of interest in them. They were 100% brass. And the scrap people seemed to get in line to take those. But the brass pumps pump the distilled water inside, and the old iron pumps pump the water outside.
And the water was pumped out to the pond to go through the air to take the heat out of it.
Correct. Yes. It just sprayed out in the air. It was basically a water cooled system that just sprayed water in the air and relied on that action to cool the water.
And again, where the electrical connections are made, a lot of these old electrical switch panels were exposed, and so there's a big metal cage around this for safety purposes.
Yes, when I came here, when I first came here, this was all open. Matter of fact, and of course there was 2,400 volts was the primary voltage here.
And it is in fact active, is it not?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, there.
So instead of the traditional big black phenolic switch that you labor to slap over to the side, here we have what are known as knife switches, and there's three ganged together on a piece of, I guess, Bakelite with a great big handle insulated, and you would lever that up and down or left and right to make or break the contact.
Yes, absolutely, and you'll notice there are actually, looks like about 6 or 7 switches. And what really gets interesting is you're throwing the switches in the middle. Your hand, and the reason I know this is because I just did this the other day, as you're throwing the switch, your hand comes perilously close to the fuse right above, which is also hot. Here are some of the lead.
Oh my word, he's lifting a lead cable that's about 2.5 inches in diameter and heavier than...
Just this end I'm lifting probably weighs 50 or 75 pounds.
All lead covered.
All lead covered, yeah, yeah.
Now over here, I think we're in the high voltage realm.
Yes, that's the 2400 volts coming in from the substation.
All right, and it's not unusual to see block and tackle or a chain hoist to move things that are heavier than either of us would like to lift.
Yes, we've put that to good use many times. Speaking of fallout shelters, I'll have to show you that.
Paul is taking us into a room with the traditional backup radio equipment,
yes,
with the power turned on. Yes. So you've got the makings of a complete radio station.
Yes, right? We can basically go on the air here. It's just a matter of putting in a patch cord. We've got a microphone. We've got a mixing console. We've got a cart machine, a tape, and a cassette machine, and a reel-to-reel. We've got all the media for the machines underneath.
Oh yeah. Yep.
If you're ever listening to WLW. You hear ZZ Top come on with Sharp Dressed Man, you'll know that somebody has activated the emergency backup.
There you go. I love it. The traditional cots, and there's some...
I've slept on that cot before.
Have you?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Do you have the 2 months worth of food supplies in a closet somewhere that some of them...
You mean the Civil Defense Official Survival
there
Biscuits?
There you go. He's got the survival biscuits.
Yes.
Look at the date.
Date pack, February, March, or April of 1962.
I don't think you're going to dig into those, are you?
No. Actually, one of these cans I pulled out the other day looked a little swelled. This
is a tin about 14 inches high, maybe 6 by 10, and it's a sealed tin just like you get your Spam in, and he's got a box of them over there.
It says it weighs 6 pounds, 15 packages, 26 biscuits each.
So you have biscuits, you have, there's a sanitation kit, which we assume is for sanitation.
Well, you have
everything has the Civil Defense logo on it,
yeah,
and here's the drinking water.
This is where you put your drinking water, and then of course, once you get the drinking water in, you need to have a place to get rid of it, so you've got your...
The sanitation kit.
You've got your toilet seat that goes on top of a barrel. Seat.
And that's got lime in the bottom, or it had probably?
It's got, there's toilet paper and all kind of stuff. You've got, you've got your iodine for water purification.
And you know, some of us are probably not old enough to remember that this was considered a real threat back then, and it was... There was a comfort to knowing you could bolt that door and keep going, because if the bomb ever hit, and in the 50s particularly,
yes,
that was really scary.
Absolutely. Of course, now with watching smart bombs and all that, I'd be as far away from here as I could get.
Yeah, thank you
exactly.
very much. Yes,
exactly. We are now calling ourselves a primary entry point, and we are a PEP station. We're one of 34 stations, and we operate at the behest of the White House.
Can I ask you now, were you one of the stations that was hit by the test that went awry a couple of years ago?
No, and that test was actually being done for WLS out of Chicago. WLS did not get taken over because Warren Scholes, the chief engineer, was at the site testing, so he knew that he was, you know, going to be receiving a test, so he was there, and it didn't take over that station. It did, however, take over WTAM in Cleveland. I think it might have got WWL. It got used to be QDR. I think it's 540 in Orlando.
And all the stations that are relying on them probably tripped all the way down the chain.
Yes, and actually it got as far south as Lima, Ohio. And I think the only reason it didn't make it down here because the state of Ohio is set up that something from Cleveland should have came all the way down and got us.
Right.
But it didn't, and I think the reason it didn't was the guy in Lima happened to be working behind the rack and heard the test go off and thought he had done it, so he unplugged the unit.
Whoa.
And so
his name wasn't Fred Bobby, was
no,
it?
No, it wasn't Fred. No, it wasn't Fred. So he I believe the story is he thought he bumped something, so he unplugged the unit to be safe and went ahead and that broke the chain, or it probably would have gotten down to here. If it had gotten to us, probably would have got to the state of Kentucky and the state of Indiana. And
if you're a late tuner-inner, you may not remember we talked about this with Gary Wilson about the PPAC system and about how a test was requested, and because the operator did not know there was more than one page of stations to take off the test list, pages 2, 3, and 4 or whatever it is actually took this test, and it was on in some stations on the air for 45 minutes there.
Yeah. What happened was the stations, there was a couple of stations that found out the hardware, they didn't have the equipment in place to actually reset the unit, and I think that got remedied rather quickly after that. Yes.
Okay, leaving the fallout shelters now, we can walk up and look out the windows and take a look at the towers. Now, you've got two towers. One looks to be just a standard tower, uniform cross-section, I guess it's called. It looks like it's about a quarter wave. And then, of course, there's the behemoth, which looks to be freshly painted, and that's the famous Blaw-Knox radiator that is diamond shaped in the middle and tapered at both ends.
Yes, it's 747 feet to be exact, and it was actually shortened. It was originally 827 feet, and they found that the tower was a little long for nighttime propagation and was causing some high angle
sky wave
problems. Yes. And so it was shortened down to actually 707 feet, which means that they took the pole off the top and just dropped the pole down inside the tower and lashed it inside the tower, and so that made the tower roughly a half wave. Well, along comes the 70s and that newfangled FM, and they decided that they needed a place to hang their FM antenna on the tower out here, so they put the pole back up, but they shortened it to just 40 feet sticking out of the top of the tower. It is a little longer than it needs to be, but
you know what DXers love to hear, that there's more skywave there than you want. Our friend Watt Hairston, we both know, down at WSM, sure. Had mentioned that when Blaw-Knox put up that tower down there, they came right up the road and built this one back in the early 30s, I think it must have been.
That's correct.
Is this about the same physical size in the middle?
Physical, 40, yeah, 40? 40, 38, 40 feet, something like that in the middle. It's about the same size.
And it's square in the middle. It's
square in the middle.
Tapers up and down.
And the one difference is this one has letters on the front of it.
Right.
It has the call sign on the front of it,
and
which are about 11 feet tall. I've been up there.
Are they really?
Yeah.
My word.
Yeah. So, I can't reach the top of them.
Are they lit at night? I haven't noticed.
They were originally neon. The neon, of course, was tremendously expensive to maintain, and I think was finally taken off in the 70s. The guy that lived here before me is named Jim Hampton. He said it finally just got to the point to where they just said
climbing.
They were climbing. So what we did was actually painted the letters in with a white paint, and then just sodium lights that shine on it, and they actually do a pretty good job of lighting the thing up. Yeah.
And it's guyed only at the middle.
Only at the middle.
How big are the guy cables?
Guy cables are just under 2 inches, inch and 11, 15 sixteenths, 13,
size. Yeah. I can see the cooling pond from your office window here.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, what, you said maybe a foot of water in it is about all. And there were some pipes that go out the middle, and there's sprayers on there, I think.
Right. They used to turn up, now they're turned down. If you'll notice, the nozzles are pointed down.
Yeah.
The reason is they were losing so much water due to wind.
I wonder if there are any goldfish in that pond besides the bass you talked about.
I have put several hundred goldfish in there, and they don't last long.
Do the bass eat them, or are they just
Yes, they love them. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
That pump, or that whole water system out there is not active anymore. No, you can't turn it on anniversaries or anything like that. It's still fun to look at. So maybe people did go swimming in there, but they might have been under the influence.
That's probably the case. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Now I look up, and way over our heads, looks like a shack up there in the sky. That's up there a ways.
Yeah, it's about 90 feet in the air.
What is it?
That's a guard shack. That actually was a watchtower. They had a little shack, and it had a spotlight on top, and during World War II, they had armed guards up there.
So they were worried about sabotage, I suppose, during the war, somebody coming in and shooting out the place?
Yeah, there were motion sensors on the fence. They were real serious about it, yeah.
Paul Jellison, thank you so much for your time. You took time off on your vacation here at Christmas week 2002.
Well, you know, I don't consider this work.
You don't? I've just been watching you here, and this is a labor of love for you.
Oh, absolutely. I've lived on this location since 1991. It's always been just you know, quite an adventure to live here, to say the least. It's a lot of fun, you know, it really is.
What a great thing to say, and to meet a guy who really lives his job and loves it. And to be at a place like this, which has such heritage.
Oh, it's incredible, yeah.
Mark Dernberger on the road with the DX Audio Service. We'll be back again next month. And until then, good listening, DXers.
I got a woman, she's 6'3". Vampire, that's her name. Vampire, that's my baby's name.
Hello again, DXers. Ken Amischuk back here. At the request of a certain Canadian DXer, I have the obituary of former Cubs broadcaster Vince Lloyd here. A native of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Vince Lloyd Scaff was born June 1st, 1917, and began his career at local KTRI in Sioux Falls. He later worked in Bloomington, Illinois, then at WMBD Peoria, where the late Jack Brickhouse was working. Vince served in the Marines in World War II before returning to WMBD post-war. He covered University of Illinois football, Bradley University basketball, semi-pro sports in Peoria. In September 1949, he joined WGN Radio and Brickhouse as partner on Cubs and Sox baseball telecasts. In 1961, he became the first sportscaster to interview a sitting president when he spoke to John F. Kennedy before he threw out a first ball on opening day in Washington, D.C. After Cubs radio broadcaster Jack Quinlan died in a car crash during spring training 1965, at Lou Boudreau's urging, he moved to the radio side to be Lou's partner for the next 23 years. Aside from doing Cubs baseball, Vince also did the Big Ten basketball game of the week, DePaul University basketball, the Chicago Hustle women's pro basketball games, and also Chicago Bulls games for 8 years. He retired in 1987 after 38 years at WGN. In 1994, he returned for a celebration of Wrigley Field's 80th anniversary and was reunited with Jack and Lou to broadcast a few innings. Boudreau died 2 years ago. Vince Lloyd Scaff is survived by his second wife, Myrtle, of 3 years, and a son, Michael, and was buried in his home in Sioux Falls. The next item I want to pass along here quickly. I found out on August the 5th, Matt Fishman, a native Chicagoan who worked his way up from intern to sports director for 9 years at WSCR, 820, then 1160, now 670, has resigned to be program director at the new 610 WDAF Kansas City, which I guess will drop country to be sports talk in September. Okay, now that baseball's coming to an end and the best teams will be going for the playoffs, I have current National Football League media information here that is about as up-to-date as I could find through early August. So here we go. the Atlanta Falcons on 640 WGST, despite the fact they've read 92.9 ZGC elsewhere, and 37 affiliates with Jeff Van Note and Jeff Hollinger and Billy Johnson. Arizona Cardinals out of Phoenix on 1060 KDUS and 100.7 KSLX, Dave Pasch and John Missler. The Baltimore Ravens on 1300 WJFK, 102.7 WQSR with Scott Garceau and Tom Maddy. Buffalo Bills, the only thing I learned, 96.9 WGRF with Van Miller and John Murphy. Carolina Panthers out of Charlotte, 99.7 WRFX and 38 others with Bill Rosinski, Eugene Robinson, and Jim Zoke. Chicago Bears on 780 WBBM with Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, and Hub Arkush. Cincinnati Bengals, 1360 WCKY, 92.5 WOFX, and 15 others, and no announcers listed. Cleveland Browns only found out 1100 WTAM and 100.7 WMMS and 39 others. Dallas Cowboys told me little, just 98.7 KLUV and probably the Texas State Network. The Denver Broncos in English, 850 KOA with Dave Logan and Scott Hastings, and in Spanish, 1280 WBNO. That's KBNO, thank you. Detroit Lions have a new flagship this year, 97.1 WKRK and 25 others with Mark Champion and Jim Brandstetter. The Green Bay Packers on 620 WTMJ Milwaukee and 70 others with Wayne Larrivee and Larry McCarron. The Houston Texans in English on 610 and 100.3 KILT and 23 others with Mark Vandermeer and Andre Ware. Spanish 1010 KLAT and 4 others. Indianapolis Colts, only thing I found was 94.7 WFBQ and 20 others. Jacksonville Jaguars on 690 WOKV, 96.9 WKQL and 16 others with Jeff Lagerman and Brian Sexton. Kansas City Chiefs, only info is 101.1 KCFX, Harrisonville, Missouri. Miami Dolphins, the only station 560 WQAM, maybe 1140 WQBA, might do it in Spanish, don't know. Minnesota Vikings, the only information, 1130 KFAN. New England Patriots on 104.1 WBCN Boston, 47 others with Gil Santos and Gino Capoletti. New Orleans Saints in English, 870 WWL, and in Spanish, an 830 WFNO. New York Giants, 660 WFAN and 7 others, Bob Papa, Dick Lynch, Dave Jennings, and the New York Jets, 770 WABC is the only info I had. Oakland Raiders is confusion. They list 1050 KNBR, though I know it's in 680. I need some help out there. The announcers, Greg Papa, Tom Flores. Pittsburgh Steelers play at Heinz Field this year on 970 WBGG, 102.5 WDVE, 41 others, Bill Hillgrove, Myron Cope, and Tunchilkin. St. Louis Rams, only information is 103.3 KLOU. And preseason games on channel 46 out of East St. Louis, Illinois. San Diego Chargers in English, 760 KFMB, Dan Rowe and Hank Bauer. Spanish 1420 XEXX, George Villanueva and two others. San Francisco 49ers on the King of the West Coast, 810 KGO and 19 others. No play-by-play though listed. Seattle Seahawks, 710, KIRO, and 31 others with Sam Adkins and Brian Davis. The Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Ray James Stadium, 970 WFLA, no other information available. The Tennessee Titans out of Nashville on 103.3 WKDF and 68 others with Mike Keith. And finally, the Washington Redskins on 106.7 WJFK and 42 others no other information available.
Thanks, Ken. And on our CPC test calendar, test number one will occur on October 4th, 2003. That's Saturday. And the frequency is 730 kilohertz WJTO in Bath, Maine. We'll conduct a test from midnight until 0100 Eastern Daylight Standard Time. They'll be doing the test at 1,000 watts non-directional. Morse code IDs and nostalgic music will be played. Reports can be sent to Mr. Bob Bittner, that's B-I-T-T-N-E-R, Post Office Box 747, Rowley, Massachusetts, and that's spelled R-O-W-L-E-Y, and the zip code is 01969. This is a test run automated from his home, so it should be rather interesting. If you happen to hear the test, let him know the details. If you don't hear the test, at least write to him and tell him thanks for conducting a DX test for all the National Radio Club members. Before we flip over to side two of this tape, just a quick mention to some of our new members and also to some of the older members who might not have done this, that if you have a chance, send us your phone number or an email address. The reason we're looking for this information is that sometimes we have problems with the mail. In fact, this past month we've had three members' tapes come back to us saying that they don't live there anymore, yet the address in the database hasn't changed since they joined up with the DX Audio Service. And what I'd like to do is just give them a call and say, hey, what is the correct address? Because your tapes are coming back to us. We don't want to starve you of your DX Audio Service. So if we have no way of getting in contact with you, we just have to throw your tapes in a box and wait for you to get in contact with us. So it helps out if you have a telephone number or an email address so we can get in touch with you when we have a mail problem like this. Just send them to me here at the DX Audio Service or email them to Fred V. That's F-R-E-D-V at nrcdxas.org. Hey, let's flip over to side two of the DX Audio Service. We'll hear from Mr. Phil Wayne with a look at the Market Scope.
Quick, Doctor. One of the Beach Boys was bitten by a seagull while walking in the sand.
Walking in the what?
The sand.
Bart, you might have to bring him in. Mars, got rid of those seagulls.
Oh, Doc, it hurts me.
Only when you laugh, I suppose.
No, Doc, only when I do the frug.
Who's that banging on the piano?
I don't know. Mars, got rid of those seagulls that are bugging my back.
Oh, Doc, it hurts me.
Who's that banging on the piano?
I don't know. Mars, those seagulls, please. Shut them off.